Welcome to the ISGO podcast with Dr. Dearan O'Leary. My name is Dr. Dervla Collins. I'm a medical oncologist and I'm president of ISGO, the Irish Society of Gynecological Oncology. Our aim is to advocate for patients through improvements in education, training and research. And the purpose of this podcast is to highlight the lived experience of patients undergoing gynecological treatments, combining the evidence with patient stories. We hope this will serve as a support to patients as well as those working in the area. We are very grateful to our sponsors, Breakthrough Cancer Research, Ireland's leading research charity for poor prognosis cancers. Breakthrough Cancer Research supports research all over Ireland in gynecological cancers.
Welcome to episode 3 of the ISGO podcast. In this episode, we talk to Dr. Carrie Dennehy and Dr. Miriam Colleran, consultants in palliative medicine. And then we talk to Anne about her lived experience of palliative care. Dr. Carrie Dennehy, you're a consultant in palliative medicine, and you are here to dispel common myths about palliative medicine.
Thanks, Dearan. I guess there are a lot of misconceptions when it comes to palliative care and the terminology around palliative care and hospice care. And I think 3 points are useful to make today for the audience. And firstly, I would say it's not a case that when cancer treatment ceases, palliative care become involved. In fact, we overlap in a mutually supportive way, and we have very, very strong relationships with our oncology colleagues, which supports patients better in their illness journey. Secondly, I would say that palliative care is not synonymous with the end or indeed the start of the end. And we follow patients for years and months with illness, with cancer and other diseases, and have long relationships with them. Thirdly, I would say that we are not rooted solely in the hospice, and a lot of our patients will know that we have a footprint far outside the hospice walls. And moreover, hospice can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people, depending on their need.
Such important and really powerful points, Carrie, and particularly, you know, that hospice care or palliative care means very different things to different people, because I think people going through a cancer diagnosis or going through palliative care, oftentimes naturally, of course, look to other people or examples in their life of somebody going through that, but it might be very different from one person to another. So can you explain kind of how you're working, I suppose, as a part of the multidisciplinary team, that it's not that somebody's finished up their cancer care and now you get passed on to palliative care? You actually work together in conjunction as a team.
Absolutely. That's 100% true. And oncology like to get us involved early, which we would support in terms of symptom control. So that includes patients both off their anti-cancer treatment, but definitely true for a lot of people who continue on therapies for their cancer, be that chemotherapies and immunotherapies and other treatments. So contrary to what might seem intuitive, for some, our involvement might actually increase a patient's chance of receiving treatments from their oncologist. And this is because if patients are very well symptom controlled and their physical symptoms are optimized through our input in palliative care, they can become in turn physically stronger. And if they're felt to be fit enough to manage treatment, there's a greater likelihood their oncologist will be confident to support giving them those kinds of treatments, because patients will know that it can take a bit out of them when they get these chemotherapy and immunotherapy sessions. And sometimes you'll hear the term palliative and supportive care. So number one, we help them to get to the treatment. And number two, sometimes we can help them get through the treatment a little bit better.
That's such an important and really great way of putting it. And we were talking to Dr. Collins earlier about some of the side effects of medications, and sometimes they need to be paused because of that. But that's, you know, that the strength of palliative care team coming in early and in conjunction with the oncologist. And I think a lot of people really would know that. And as you say, that's one of the biggest myths, that palliative care come in after, but no, oftentimes come in conjunction with the team to help the patient be strong enough for chemotherapy and be strong enough for treatment and to manage their side effects. So a lot of what you do as a palliative care doctor is helping patients with symptom control.
Absolutely, Dearan. And, you know, we're living in a really positive era from a medical advancing medical therapy point of view. And certainly oncology is a good example of that. and palliative care have a job keeping up with oncological advances, and the whole landscape of treatment in that field is changing. And as Dr. Dervla-Collins will have outlined earlier, there are treatments which hold great promise for patients. A lot of newer agents which patients are getting better quality of life from and longevity from. So we encourage and really value early referral from our oncology colleagues. And the purpose of an early referral is that so patients, while living longer on treatments and living despite cancer, we can help them live well with cancer. So we explore their concerns, their expectations and their care preferences. And if we're involved early, we can form relationships with these patients so that we can explore and discuss and agree on care plans that are most appropriate for their needs and tailor-made for each patient. So the approach will be very individualized for each patient because everybody's so different. And even with the same cancer subtype, patients will have huge differences depending on, you know, their body makeup, other illnesses, and even their, you know, their context within their family and social situations, which can have a knock-on effect. So we provide and represent an extra layer of support.
Yeah, that's so interesting. And a lot of the patient advocates that we spoke to today as well, you know, spoke of like how each story is so unique and different needs and different wants. And they all spoke of how supportive their care teams have been. And, you know, that's all of that individualized support that's coming from their oncologists and from their cancer specialist nurses and from the palliative care and support team as well. And as well, palliative care, you know, it's not hospice care. Is it, Carrie? You know, there's more to it than that.
Absolutely correct. And thanks for raising that again, Darren, because it's one of the points I hope to get across today that, you know, it's a long time now that we've been uncoupled from hospice care in terms of the building itself. And really, it's not where the care is that's important. It's the quality of care and the people who are involved. Mm-hmm. As you say, the multidisciplinary and interdisciplinary teams who follow patients and support each other in following patients. And it's important that we communicate very clearly with, for example, oncology colleagues along a patient's disease trajectory so that we're not maybe duplicating unnecessarily and that we can try and dovetail appointments so that the patient's needs are met in a sort of a patient-centered or person-centered approach. So a lot of people who are under our care will know that we meet patients certainly in the hospice, but the hospice might mean an outpatient clinic appointment or day hospice services sometimes for some patients who are ambulatory and fit enough to come in. It does mean end-of-life care admissions for some, but not all. We meet people in the hospital setting, so the acute hospital from the ED through the oncology day unit and up the house in the hospital, and also in patients' homes and long-term care facilities. So really wherever the patient's at, so that it's, as I said, patient-focused and moreover family-focused. And I suppose just, you know, a point on that. I mean, we meet so many very impressive patients and, you know, it's remarkable the will and resilience that we meet in our patients every day of our working lives. And I think this is what motivates us to do our best to try and improve all of the time on the coordination of the care we give them. And, you know, we're aiming that patients won't have to navigate challenges alone in the illness journey that they might face, and that they feel supported throughout and that they're not sort of project managing their own healthcare journey. And there's always support that we can give on that front for our patients so that they have more scope for living well, and we can uncover even more motivation than we're already witnessing.
Yeah, that, you know, that's so inspiring, and definitely like what a lot of the message that I've really heard from the patient advocates this morning. You know, you're all doing such a great job in that supporting patients, you know, and like they, you know, of course, there's a piece of patients must advocate for themselves. But it's hard. Like you describe project management of it. It's hard. So coming in with all of that support is so supportive for patients. And again, just reiterating the point that palliative care and support means different things to different people always. So just to keep that in mind. And, you know, palliative care, your work as a palliative care consultant, it's not just cancer care, is it, Carrie? There's different illnesses that you treat as well.
Right. Yeah, that's true, Darren. And you raise a really important point, because today's focus might be around some cancer subtypes. For the purpose of these conversations that we're having and these patients that we're meeting, But in fact, our scope of practice reaches far beyond just cancer. So we see patients with any advanced serious illness who have some sort of symptomatic need or complexity, so that we can help them, as I said, to live well and live full lives. Because sometimes it's not about being disease-free, but living with their illness. So we would see a lot of what we call non-malignant or non-cancer disease subtypes, anything from heart failure, chronic airways disease, pulmonary fibrosis, advancing illness and frailty in the older population with conditions like dementia, for example, or Parkinson's disease. And I'm really only naming what's coming to mind. Yeah. There are many. There's always something we can do, no matter how advanced an illness or how challenged a person or family might feel through illness. So, as I said, it's all about early referral and trying to relationship build early on in one's course of illness, so that we can plan ahead. And so we kind of live for today, plan for tomorrow, and, you know, hope for the best throughout all of that.
Thank you so much for dispelling those common myths and for wrapping up on that very inspiring note. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Darren. Lovely to talk to you today. Thank you.
So now we're speaking to Dr. Miriam Colleran, who is a consultant in palliative medicine, and we're talking more about redefining what palliative medicine means. Dr. Colleran, if you could describe your role as a palliative medicine consultant, how would you describe it or redefine it?
Well, I suppose when we're talking about palliative care, really we're talking about care of the person. You know, the Dame Cecily Saunders is considered really the founder of modern palliative and hospice care. And she captured it really well when she said, "You matter because you are you, and you matter to the end of your life. We will do all that we can, not only to help you die peacefully, but also to live until you die." So really, when we're talking about palliative care, whether palliative care nurse, consultant, doctor, what we're really focused on is whole person care for the person, to help them live as well as possible for however long they have. Your question reminds me of something yesterday, actually, as recently as yesterday, at IPOS, which is the International Psycho-Oncology Society conference. It's in Milan at the moment. And Pernilla Gunther, who is a former member of the Swedish Parliament and actually a member of the Mission Board of Cancer, is actually a cancer survivor herself. And what she said was that patients have the right to be acknowledged as a human being. So really what we're talking about in palliative care is actually about wraparound care for the person. So to help them to live as well as possible for as long as possible, however long that is. And in my role as consultant in palliative medicine, that's what I'm very much focused on. I work as part of an interdisciplinary team with my nursing and health and social care professional colleagues to actually give the best care possible that we can for a patient, and to support them and their family for however long they have. In palliative care, often people think of us in terms of dying, and that's a really important part of what we do. Care for persons who are dying and supporting their family is a really important part of our care. But it's one aspect of our care. We look after patients and try to help support patients at earlier in their disease stage, but also for symptom control. And we very much work, as I mentioned, about wraparound care with our colleagues. We work very closely with our colleagues in oncology, but also with our GP colleagues, public health, nursing and primary care teams, and the hospital care teams. So really it's about giving an integrated care journey for the person.
Yeah, such important points there. You know, it's person-centered care. And you touched on the point as well that Dr. Carrie Dennehy made as well, that it is not just hospice care, it's person-centered care. And a lot of that takes place in the community as well, you know, in the patient's own setting and, you know, with their family. And it's very person-centered care. When somebody, you know, is referred to palliative medicine or it's brought up with the team, what are the thoughts that you find that patients initially have when that conversation is first brought up, Miriam?
Interesting question. And I suppose I can't, but I'm not I want to make sure I heard you right. What thought the patient has in terms of on palliative
Yes.
care. Okay. And I suppose I can't presume to know what patients think, actually. Do you know, I can't presume to know because the cancer journey is very different for each patient. But I can understand what someone's concerns that they might have in terms of hearing palliative care be involved. So really when we're talking about palliative care, we're talking about specializing in about working towards someone's hopes and wishes and their expectations, about remembering that we are not the expert in the patient's journey. The patient actually is the person who's affected by cancer, the woman who has gynecological cancer. She is expert in her own lived experience of her cancer. So we do need to have the therapeutic humility to actually focus on that person, on their hopes, their wishes, their expectations, what their need is for their cancer journey and how to support them and their loved ones, their support persons. So really what you're saying there, the question that you're asking brings to mind about obviously therapeutic humility, and that while we can have certain expectations, I should say rather, on what might happen when someone has a particular disease, we actually have to very much adapt our clinical care to that person, their particular illness, how it's affecting them, impacting on them, their loved ones, and try to optimize their care and their symptom control and their quality of life as much as possible. Another aspect of that is the importance of journeying with someone through their illness and through the cancer progression. And that actually reminds me, your question reminds me of an article, a study that was recently published by Thomas et al. And it showed the importance of the therapeutic relationship between the oncologist and they used the beautiful phrase therapeutic alliance. So it's that therapeutic relationship, the therapeutic alliance between the oncologist and the patient, or I suppose in really we can extrapolate to clinician and patient, and that it was associated, but in that study it was associated with a better quality of life for patients with cancer, having the stronger therapeutic relationship between the patient and the oncologist. So it really emphasizes the importance of journeying with someone through a patient's, through their illness journey, and actually early referral, and actually seeing patients earlier in their illness so that it isn't a crisis and then a crisis referral to palliative care, that we actually can help support the person as much as possible.
That's a really interesting point as well, and builds on the point that Dr. Dennehy said about that palliative medicine coming in early, and the earlier palliative medicine meets the patient, and then the stronger that therapeutic relationship can be, you know, and the earlier you're meeting the patient and their family, learning about them, their individualized needs, so that you can give that holistic, patient-centered care, and building that therapeutic relationship with the patient and their family. I know, you know, one of the themes that has really come up this morning is how nobody has the same journey or experience, and everybody is so different in their journey. But if you could maybe try to think of a message that you would maybe like to give to somebody maybe who has just been referred maybe to palliative care, or is about to meet their palliative care team, if you could give them a message, what would you say to them, somebody listening who's going through it or starting that journey?
Well, I think a key word that you used there for me actually was listening. So good clinical care in general and good palliative care is about listening. So really the message that I would want to give a person, a woman or her family actually who's been newly referred to palliative care is actually that we're there as an extra support, part of the wraparound team to help support them on their journey and support them no matter what happens. Obviously, we're wishing for the best possible for the person, for the person, but it's about tailoring the treatment plans and the care to their needs and adapting according to their wishes and their hopes and their expectations. And a lovely way of checking that out with the person, actually, I think, is using Professor Harvey Chochinov's the patient dignity question. And that's actually a very simple question that any of us clinicians can use. What do I need to know about you as a person to give the best care possible for you? So it's actually just, I mean, it's actually a validated instrument, but actually it's a very person-centered question about how can we as clinical staff help you and tailor and optimize the treatment for you? Because what one person wishes may be very different to another, and that's absolutely fine. People have the right to refuse treatment, and that's a really important right for people to know that they have the right to refuse treatment. So what we want to do is tailor the treatment plans and the goals of care to this particular person, this particular wishes. Is the important issue for them to be at home? Is hospitalization something that they want to minimize as much as possible? Or actually is hospitalization very acceptable to them? And actually, are they happy to pursue maybe a more active course of treatment, aware that they may need to have more hospitalization? Both are fine goals. It just depends. Both are equally important. It's actually whatever matters to the person that matters. Or do they have very important issues, like they could have an upcoming wedding or a grandchild celebration? All those things are really important, because we live in the context of our communities, our families, our wider hopes and dreams. And we all have wider hopes and dreams. So how can we tailor the treatment to actually suit this particular person? Do they have a family member coming home for abroad? Or equally, do they want to go abroad to see them? You know, so how do we tailor our treatment to give the best possible care, as Dr. Ira Byock says, to give the best possible care for this particular person, however long they have?
That's so insightful, and you know, really highlights, you know, the message, you know, a person is so much more than their illness. And you know, as their treating doctor, you're treating so much more you know, than their symptoms or than their illness. You're treating them in their world, in their completely unique world to them. And discussing palliative medicine this morning with you and Dr. Dennehy has been so enlightening in terms of redefining what palliative medicine means. So thank you so much for your time this morning. If there was any other important message that you wanted to share, is there anything else important that you'd like to share with our listeners this morning, Miriam?
That we all work I think really it is that we all work together as a team, ourselves, our GP colleagues, the public health nurses, the hospital-based team, oncology, the surgical teams, if they're involved. We all work together to help support patients. And communication is just so important for us as a team, so we can deliver the best possible care for the person, wherever they want to be, at home in the nursing home, living at home with a family member, or whether their actually care is at times more hospital-based. So it's about, we want to meet the person's needs wherever they are. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Colleran. So helpful.
Thank you very much.
So now we're going to chat with Anne, who's going to chat with us about her lived experience of palliative medicine. So Anne, you were diagnosed with ovarian cancer in 2014.
Yeah, that's right.
And you were introduced to your palliative medicine team.
That was 2015, because the chemo was no longer working, so I had moved from curative stage to palliative stage. And when I was informed that I was going into palliative stage, and the nurse from Marymount attended the hospital, I started crying, because I was aware that, or as far as I was aware, a hospice was some place you go to die, you know. So I thought I was dying, So that's the first thing I said to the nurse, am I dying? And she said, look in the mirror. So I looked into the mirror and she said, do you look as if you're dying? And I said, no, well, you're not, she said, as far as I'm concerned. So that was my first introduction to a hospice, you know, to palliative care. What? And then she explained what palliative care was involved, symptom control and a holistic approach to your treatment, and involving all your family. Your family is treated as well as you, because unfortunately, when you get cancer, your family also suffer from the cancer, you know, so the hospice were involved in the care of all of us.
That's so interesting, Anne. And I imagine probably almost all patients who are introduced to their a palliative care nurse would have similar feelings around that time, you know?
Of course. I mean, that's all I was, what would you say, brought up with.
Yes.
That, and you'd read the obituaries and you'd say passed away in such hospice surrounded by family. So as far as I was concerned, that's what a hospice was all about. Nothing else, you know, this is where you're going to go. But I mean, I'm under hospice care since 2015, and they're absolutely brilliant for symptom control. And they have said to my husband, it doesn't matter, 24/7, if she's feeling unwell, ring us. There'll be someone at the other end of the phone to tell you what to do. And he has done it on a few occasions when I've been in severe pain. And he might ring them at 1 a.m., 2 a.m., and they'll tell him exactly what to do, give her extra dosage of this or extra dosage of that. And he finds such comfort in that alone that I'm happy then, once he has comfort knowing there's somebody at the other side, you know, that you don't have to be going into CUHANE or South Dock, that there's actually somebody there to tell you step by step what to do.
Absolutely. You know, having that, even just knowing there's somebody at the end of the phone who you know, they know you, mm-hmm. you know, you don't have to go to a busy waiting room or emergency department, you know, where people don't know you, your family, your story.
Exactly. They're there for you.
Yeah.
You know, and they keep saying, we're there for you and for your family. And they have brilliant counsellors there also, because I've been suffering from ovarian cancer, living with ovarian cancer since 2014. And it's like living with a gun to your head constantly. You know you're not going to be cured. And there are days there that a counsellor from the hospice might ring you up. How are you feeling today? And you might be able to say, well, today now I feel rather bad. I just want to shut myself in the room and stay quiet and listen to Joni Mitchell or something. And they'll talk you, this is natural, you know, don't. And I might say, I didn't cry today, now I held it in. And they'll be the ones that'll say, no, that's wrong. You know, that's not strength at all. You know, your body's telling you, you need to do these things. So with all the holistic approach, mind, body and spirit and family and social care for the grandchildren, even, you know, what they got for the grandchildren was pictures to colour. You know, what Nana was like before she got sick, colour a picture for that, and what Nana's like now, you know, and they're able to understand about the care as well with the hospice, and they've met the nurses, they've been to the hospice, you know, so it's not a scary place.
Yes.
You know.
And, you know, it's, I think so few people would know that, Anne, mm-hmm. so few people would know that, you know, that palliative support that comes in, you know, there's even support for that piece for the grandchildren.
Yes, exactly.
You know? And so few people would know that. And I think so few people would, know about the, you know, the whole person-centered approach like that, even that emotional support.
Yep.
Of, you know, if you're saying, you know, some days that you're saying, oh, you know, I held in crying today.
Yeah. I mean, the counsellors, you do need, you're not superwoman, you know, and it does change your life being diagnosed. And at the start, when I was told I was going into palliative treatment, palliative care, that scared the life out of me, because I thought, seriously, even if it was only going to be 6 months that I was going to survive, to the thought that this was actually in my life now that I was gone to that stage, I was terrified. But after a few months after meeting the nurses, and I was saying, you know, this isn't what I thought it was. And when my dad was diagnosed 3 years ago with terminal cancer, because I had been under palliative care, he wasn't a bit afraid of when he was told he was going under palliative care, because he saw, you know, what it did for me.
Yes.
You know.
So I think that's so interesting, Anne, because your dad was not fearful,
mm-hmm.
maybe in the same way you were at that, you know, on that first day
yes.
when the nurse asked you to look in the mirror.
Yes.
Because your dad knew through your lived experience what it was really like. And, you know, I think you talking about your experience today will really help so many people, because this episode is about redefining what people typically think palliative medicine is. And would you say that, you know, has it helped with your quality of life as you live with ovarian cancer?
It definitely has. It definitely has, because it supplies all the supports that you need. Social, emotional, physical. If you're not feeling well, you know, if you're the multidisciplinary team in the hospice will get together and they'll decide this painkiller or that painkiller, anti-nausea, to help you get on with your quality of life, that you're able to go out, have a cup of coffee and live normally. Mm. That there isn't a big C on your face, you know, that you're just ordinary Anne and hubby going out to have your coffee. And when we go up to the hospice every 4 or 6 weeks, we treat ourselves to coffee and scones there as well, and have the laugh with the receptionist, Paul, as we're going in, and we'll sing. Yeah. We'll always sing with the staff, have the crack.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about.
Yeah.
You know, lovely walks. You meet loads of people up there.
Yeah.
You know, it's a beautiful place.
You know, well, you said you're not superwoman, Anne. I think you are a superwoman. But, you know, with that said, you know, you're a very inspirational person. But, you know, to have the emotional support as well of palliative medicine is so important. If you were to give one message to somebody listening who's going through similar, or maybe at the start of the journey, Anne, what would you say to them if you could say one thing?
I would say, count your blessings that you're going under palliative care, because some people are left in limbo after chemo and this watch and wait, and you need support, but where do you go for support? And then the palliative care team come on board. Please accept the care, because you will feel 100% better. You're not dropped off of the cliff after treatment, and you will improve your quality of life and the life of your family. Go for it. That's what I'd say. Go for it. Don't be afraid.
Thank you so much, Anne, for sharing your story. I know it's not easy, but it's going to really, really help people. You're very inspiring to listen to. So thank you so much for sharing your inspirational message this morning, Anne.
Nice to talk.
Too.
Thank you for joining us today. For more information on gynecological oncology resources, please visit thisisgo.ie. This is a fantastic website for patients and their families that can be tailored to your own personal journey. It is important that all women are aware of the potential symptoms of gynecological cancers. These can include abnormal vaginal bleeding or discharge, feeling full too quickly, bloating or difficulty eating, pelvic pain or pressure, and even abdominal or back pain, a more frequent or urgent need to urinate, and constipation. Finally, itching, burning, pain or tenderness of the vulva, and changes in vulval colour or skin. If you have been experiencing any of these symptoms, please make an appointment to go see your healthcare provider.